out in the Strike and Spare Family Fun Center studio. John Burton is in New York City covering the Vols tonight. Was at the media availabilities yesterday. He's going to join us at 10:25 this morning. And Coach Watson Brown for the Coach's View at 10:05. Moved that from yesterday. Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin with us now. Hey, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Yeah, good, good. I hadn't mentioned this on the air yet, but I've broken out the shorts. And once I break out the shorts, they do not come off to Thanksgiving, okay? Unless I'm going somewhere, you know, to a wedding or something, you know. So just let you know.
I did not know that. You're anticipating a lot of good weather moving forward.
No, I'm just wear shorts, you know. So, so
good.
First, we'll talk about, you know, obviously your team and some things, but just the feeling of around Vanderbilt basketball right now with Jerry Stackhouse. I know UAB, a really good team, came in and won last night, but it just seems like the forward momentum of where this program is. And, you know, you listen to fans, yeah, but when I listen to other coaches who coach against him and coached with him, talk about him, they're all very positive just about the way he goes about his business.
Well, I think they understand what type of teacher he is inside the game, and I think that's where coaches have advantage over fans because they understand the element of the game that takes place and how players are positioned and how a guy gets his team to win and execute, and he certainly does that. I think Jerry's a guy that he transitioned from. Now, he played in the college game, obviously, for Coach Smith in North Carolina, so he learned a lot there. But this is a guy who was a veteran basketball player, so he played in the NBA for a long period of time and then coached basically in the NBA and G League and then made the transition to college basketball. That's not always easy. You haven't seen a lot of coaches who do that right away, but he certainly is very astute on what he's doing and how he's doing it, and everyone in this department loves him. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is very open with everyone inside of here. He's just a regular dude, and like him a lot, and that's why it was so much fun to watch his team play this last couple of months, because you could see he got everything out of them, never made an excuse about who they didn't have, who wasn't on the floor. It was about who they did have, and he moved right along. And those kids played so hard. They played so hard last night, too. That was a very good team they played. They were very, you can tell from a size standpoint, UAB was huge. But nonetheless, they gave us all something to be proud about and something to look forward to moving forward.
And he looked good doing it, man. I mean, just the shoes he had on last night, the suit. I mean, I'm not his tailor, I'll tell you that.
And neither am I. yeah. He's got a style about him that's different, and it's kind of cool to see. So he's great in so many different ways.
Tim, they don't hand out trophies in March, but you got to like your conference start with a sweep of Ole Miss. Just tell me how that evolved, and it just looked like your team really came together for a weekend.
Well, it's a start. I mean, anytime you play well that first weekend, it helps confidence and it helps team play. I just thought we did things really well on three sides of it, offensively, defensively, and we pitched very well because that's a very potent and old hitting lineup that you have to get through, and they can change the scoreboard really quick. So we were able to slow them down a little bit. We did it with not all strikeouts, but we didn't give them anything. I think we gave them six free bases all weekend, and that had a lot to do with played really good ground ball defense, covered the ball in the air, caught the ball well behind the plate, and then we were aggressive offensively. And but I do think the foundation of everything is basically the pitching and the defense, and we did that very well, and we needed to in order to get off to a good start.
Well, and certainly on Friday, what Hunter Owen did, the junior lefty, he's SEC co-pitcher of the week, 11 Ks, 96 pitches, retired the last 23 batters that he faced, and the complete nine-inning shutout, the first since Jack Leiters in 2021 against South Carolina. When he's in that kind of groove, do you leave him alone?
Yeah, I think anyone, especially a guy who's older, but I guess it wouldn't really matter. I think so many times where these kids get on the field, and I think you have an opportunity to intertwine yourself with them, but you know, they deserve those moments. They work very hard to get onto the field, and once they're on the field, it's kind of their gift that they get to compete. And he did that very well. He's a guy that, you know, he's a very hard-nosed competitor, and I think Hunter would be the first to tell you that through the years he's evolved as someone that can really handle his adrenaline, control himself emotionally on the mound now, and is very directed on what he's doing. But I love him. I mean, he's a team guy, and he pitches for the team. That's all he cares about. And you're going to get his best. I'm just glad he had that moment where he could finish a game that he started and do it quite efficiently, too, because this time of year we don't want guys typically doing that unless they do it with less pitches, and he was able to do that.
Yeah, only 96 pitches, right? What's the target for this time of the year for your starters?
I think right there. I don't think, you know, you're not going too much more than that, but I think a lot of it is the stress of those pitches too. There's a difference sometimes in guys that are able to, you know, throw 95 pitches, but they might be really, really tough pitches. And then there's guys who can get through a game with 95 pitches, and it's relatively a little bit less stress-free, I guess. Just not as many throws over to first base, and he didn't have that. He didn't have to command the run game so much just because he kept guys off base, and that certainly helps a lot.
It just seems like all the way through the pitching right now, but you know, talk about the offense, certainly Jack Bulger, we'll just talk about him. I mean, he seems to be squaring up everything.
Well, he's hit the ball well. I mean, Jack's one of those kids that he's a pretty good hitter. I mean, he's always been a pretty good hitter, but he may have started a little bit slow, but he's starting to see the ball really well. He's taking good passes at the ball. Really like his approach. He's hitting the ball well, and I'm happy for him. He's doing everything well. You know, he's catching the ball well, and certainly playing offense. But I think when we moved him to the four hole, then he certainly, I don't know whether it was confidence from that or just general starting to find it. I thought he really starting to play well.
Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin with us this weekend at Mississippi State. We'll have all three of those games right here on Nashville Sports Radio. I've got a question. I don't know why this question comes up, because it came up with mine because I follow college basketball a lot, and I see the advanced scouting and how that goes on, and in football as well, because that's so, you know, week to week to week. For advanced scouting, you've got Mississippi State this weekend. How far back have you started looking at him with your staff? I know coaches are game by game and understand all that, but if you're not prepared down the road, how far out do you do your advanced scouting?
Well, I'd say the scouts inside the staff do it in advance. We don't mm-hmm. do it until several days leading up. I mean, we started our Mississippi State scouting as a coaching staff on when we got done playing Lipscomb on Tuesday night, but the advanced staff, they've already advanced them enough to where they've designed a report and plenty of information so that when we start doing it, there's already a foundation of information right there for you. So I think, you know, with as many games as that we have, and I think the luxury for us over basketball is sometimes in basketball or, you know, well, football, you've got days to get ready. But, you know, from our standpoint, you're almost not playing every day, but you're playing quickly. But you're playing the same team three times during the course of the weekend, so that helps. But I would say that advance work probably starts 2-3 weeks ahead of the opponent, and then for the coaching staff, just the couple days leading up to playing them.
Yeah, I hate you to show up on Wednesday. Hey, we got anything on Mississippi State? Right?
No, that wouldn't happen.
Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin with us. World Baseball Classic. I'd sort of been nonplussed about it over the years, but I really got into it this year, and it's obviously going to start rotating every 4 years, and and Japan wins it. You know, and quite frankly, I'm not attached to it enough that it bothered me that much. I think I sort of was happy for Japan because I know how much it meant for that country. But to see the star power come out in it, I love where it's set. I could probably do this every spring, and maybe the players, you know, they expose themselves to injury. I know there were a couple that, Altuve especially, and the pitcher for the Mets out for the year. But but the World Baseball Classic, I think, is a shot in the arm for baseball this time of the year.
Yeah, and I think Major League Baseball knows that too. I think there's a lot of emotion to it, and the emotion comes from, you know, being part of something that, and they say, is bigger than you, but it is. I mean, you're with countrymen, you know, people that grew up in your same country and that have an affinity from where they're from. And it's like playing for your school, so to speak. It's something that's deeper than, you know, there's no such thing as free agency. The World Baseball Classic is just country versus country versus country. And I think when you get to that point right there, then it becomes very meaningful to the people. But I think because it becomes meaningful is because the following, the fans, everyone that's involved in it, there's such passion for it. And the stadiums are like no other. You know, there's noise throughout the game from inning one to nine, and it's fascinating. The games are played at a very, very high level, and the runs are celebrated, the moments are celebrated, and certainly, you know, watching Japan, although it was against the United States of America, is kind of cool to see. It meant a lot to those guys. It's very emotional. And I think any time that sport and emotion come together, it kind of, you gravitate towards it because you see that it's just not ho-hum. You're not punching the clock. It's something that is very, very strong. So, yeah, I'm like you. I really enjoyed watching that. That was a lot of fun.
Shohei Ohtani, the modern-day Babe Ruth, I guess, from both pitching. And one of these, I was joking the other day, one of these days he's probably going to pitch and then run down there and hit his own pitch. He's doing everything. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, not in modern time. I mean, the thing about him, and, you know, I never get to see Babe Ruth. I mean, you and I hear stories about him, but you're talking about a guy that we've never seen, you know, a guy with size, a guy that can hit, a guy that with power, a guy that can play defense if he had to, a guy who gets on the mound and throws a ball as hard as anyone in Major League Baseball and then can actually pitch besides throwing hard. And I think the other piece about him is he can run. I mean, this is a guy that moves as fast as anyone in Major League Baseball, too. He gets down the first baseline, you know, sometimes under 4 seconds, which is crazy to think about. But no, we haven't seen a guy like him. He's different, and I think that's while we have him, you know, it's great to celebrate him because we just haven't seen players like this enter the game and have success, but do it in so many touches the game in so many different ways. It's fascinating.
Let's circle back around Mississippi State. Tell me about them and what a fun place to play. And not an easy place to play, but I was at the old stadium. I hadn't been to the new one, but this the way they have their own personality about the way you go about their home game, certainly. But and Mississippi State is a team as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're very good. I mean, they played Kentucky last weekend, and they've got a very good hitting lineup. They certainly can pitch, too, which last time we saw them was, you know, 21 in the College World Series. So yeah, they're going to be good. They're going to be very good. We missed them last year, but as you mentioned, playing at Duty Noble is quite a spectacle. I mean, you talk about fan bases throughout the country. I mean, we learned that when we went to Omaha, and that stadium was full of garnet, scarlet, whatever you want to call that color, but it was full, and they made a lot of noise, and it made an impression on a lot of people. It was very, very tough, but, you know, it's one of those things where you go on the road, you play in a place like this, you know it. You know it when you're there, and because of the energy that you feel, and it becomes tougher. You know, these games, I tell the guys, when you go on the road, it's like the home team starting with a 2-0 advantage right away. So we're going to have to play well. We're going to have to do it somewhere else. It's not a soft pillow situation. It's one of those situations where it's you're going to have to play aggressive, and we're by ourselves. You know, we're going to have to create that own energy within our own dugout.
All right. We need to come up with an open for the Tim Corbin Weekly Dining Report. All right, give me a what? Where you been, man? Where you, Maggie, been?
Well, last night we went to Fleming's because it was right after the basketball game, and it just made a lot of sense to us. So we did that. I was in the road. I was in Omaha past couple of days recruiting, so I was eating away from here. But I did have steak a couple of nights, but. I would say the places that we've eaten. We went to Fifth and Taylor a couple last week. That was very good. I think I mentioned that, but we went to Fleming's last night, and Fleming's is you never go wrong there, and it's very convenient just to walk over there from the office. So that's where we were. Had a piece of salmon. Salmon's very good there.
All right, in Omaha, there's that steakhouse you go to every year. You've got to know those folks. What's the name of it?
Yeah, it's Omaha Prime.
Yeah. Did you make that one?
Well, I did not eat at that one because my time was cut short, so I just ate at a place called Jay Gilbert's, which was in the Marriott. That's outstanding, too. I told my wife that was one of the best steaks I've ever had, but you really can't go wrong in Omaha. You're going to get good steak there. They don't screw that up, that's for sure.
No, and the best 10 steakhouses in Omaha, Jay Gilbert's was 5. Behind the Drover, Brother Sebastian's, Mahogany Prime, is that the one yours? Charleston's 230. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah, those are a few that are on the outskirts. But when you're inside the market area, which we were, we stayed with Omaha Prime. That was Mo was he was the owner of it, and he just sold it. But boy, that place is good.
Yeah, we're gonna record that. Then when you get back up there this year, we're gonna I'm coming, and I'm gonna try to grab a free meal. So
there you go.
Thank you, Tim. Hey, good luck this weekend. Right. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you always. Well, likewise.
Greg. All right. See you, Greg. See you, Tim. I'm Greg. I'm looking at the Omaha Prime.